Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Geek Therapeutics Podcast. I am Cornell Kritz, and here with my co-host, Alicia.
Hi, everybody. Alicia here, and we are sitting... Alicia. Don't worry, it's all good, Cornell. And we're sitting here with...
Sean Thomas.
Yeah, Sean Thomas. How's it going, everyone? I am one of the mid-range tier groups. I made it through the Geek Therapeutics program, and I'm thrilled to be here.
We're happy to have you here, Sean. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Sean. You know, what got you started in the geekdom and what brought you to something like Geek Therapeutics?
Sure. So I've been in the geek realm for a long time. HeroQuest, ironically, I think was my first foray into the geek world when my older brothers brought it home. And I got just totally enraptured and sucked in with the fantasy style miniatures, going on adventures, being able to track things, level up. It was wonderful. And shortly after that, I learned about and dove into second edition D&D. And I have never stopped being a geek since. Now, for how I got into the Geek Therapeutics, it was actually a combination of a couple things. First off, I worked in corporate America. So I was an assistant vice president in technology, handling all the fun things of keeping the applications up and the lights running so people can access their insurance policies, submit things, and do just loads of fun stuff that was very, very, very far out of the limelight. But I've been a geek throughout all this time, too. And all that time, I was working on fantasy content. I was working on books with my wife, who is an author. I was writing my own content. I was designing my own maps and adventures. I was doing everything I could in addition to running sessions. But I needed more because corporate America was actively draining my soul. And well, let's just face it, it's hard to make a living in the entertainment industry. But I thought I owed it to myself and to others to see if I can bring more to my table. And I started exploring whether or not there were options that could give me better training, better templates, and better information on how to make a safe space at a tabletop RPG session. And during that, I stumbled across this program, learned about it, sounded like a great fit, and it was.
What was the first game that you kind of just felt had that therapeutic feel to it that you felt could have that application?
It was, ironically, when I first dived into Scion Second Edition, it wasn't completely my cup of tea from a gameplay style, but the story narrative of the character building, where you had so much control and influence on your character's background and its association with the relative gods, who you were as an individual and who you wanted to be, and the embracing of your failure points in order to tell and progress a story. So recognizing how failure was a storytelling point that was built into the system made me feel like, well, you know, I get a lot of compliments and a lot of good feels running games for people. And I really love to help people as well. What if I could use tabletop role playing to be a better friend and to be a better supporter? And I started doing some simple sessions where I helped people on one-on-one, not just how to learn to play the game, but how to learn to use the game as a foil and explore topics or to just discuss things or even just relax and have a good time and get past some of that social anxiety so that they could come to a bigger group and not feel so overwhelmed. So I would say that my first time doing that was about 3 or 4 years ago, but I didn't really dig deep into it until about a year ago.
On that same vein of impact, it seems, how has tabletop role-playing impacted your life prior to entering into this more mindful space of gameplay? And as you've been playing with the individuals that you've been serving?
Sure. So a couple of ways. Tabletop role-playing introduced a new perspective for me. When I was growing up, I was always a gamer geek. I mean, I was derping around on the Atari, having fun with the NES and every single console from then thereafter. And I gravitated towards role-playing games. So as I gravitated to those games, I started to notice similarities in either the hero story or the mechanics. And I could start noticing preparation points, little red flags that were put down for characters to find Easter eggs and the logic around them and how to successfully build a story to deliver an emotional experience. So I would say tabletop role-playing gave me the opportunity to break down how to tell a story. And then how to construct a story so that you can deliver it at a table with other players. It was wonderful, for me at least. And this wasn't something like a particular book I read helped me understand this. This was mostly just insight from an experience and my own need to understand it better, to be better as me. With the individuals, there's a lot of players who have touched my heart and leave resonating memories, either through the actions they took as their players or who they were as individuals themselves. With the Geek Therapeutic Program, I have a couple of testimonials on my website that really, really mean a lot to me. It speaks of some of my core values about being welcoming, about making them feel comfortable, and helping them being able to explore or touch on issues that they've been struggling to find an opportunity to approach in a real life setting. So those feel good moments for me helped me reaffirm that this is what I wanted to do, and actually caused me to pull the trigger of quitting corporate America to start my own business and take the grand leap into private small business ownership.
When was that, light bulb moment, that Doc Brown type moment for you with creating this particular business model that you use now?
So for me, the light bulb moment is that I actually still go to and have been going to therapy myself. I have major anxiety and I have major depressive disorder. These things for me don't go away. I learn how to cope with them. I learn how to deal with them. And a big, big topic for my therapist and myself was how to deal with stress, how to reduce anxiety. What can we control? What are our tools? And I would say that the light bulb moment happened when things got really tough for me at work. I ended up taking a 5.5 month leave of absence due to extreme overwork and duress. And during that time, I had already developed a lot of content on my own. And I just had a eureka moment, honestly. It just hit me that what if I did Dungeons and Dragons as a service, because I was a technology leader. I'm very familiar with service models. I'm very familiar with how to set those up. I understand them. I get the need from a consumer and I get the requirements from a producer, in order to cover costs. Mm-hmm. And so I started just digging in deep, and I ended up over the course of 1 week designing my entire business model. And I walked into my therapist's office and I said, "Hey, be honest with me. If I told you I was trying to create a safe space for therapists to refer their clients to if they are geeky and want to learn how to play D&D, would you be happy to have that as a tool option?" She was really happy. She was thrilled. And then right after that, I dove into it more and I started cracking down on price points and logos. And I thought up this entire business model in June. And I had the LLC formed and everything else done in September. And I quit my job October 1st.
That is amazing. And I just want to applaud you. I wish I could high-five you through the virtual space, because in therapy and therapeutic settings, it's so important for individuals to have competency. And there are individuals who don't really want or know how to find geek therapeutics and learn those things. And to have someone say, "I have this skill set, would you be willing and okay with people who may reach out for help, looking mm-hmm. at my model and saying, yes, I think this is sound." I find that to be fascinating. And when you found Geek Therapeutics, did you know that something like the conversation you had had with your personal therapist existed?
No, I had actually no idea. It actually just started off with me simply just expanding on Session Zero content and trying to find better models and templates around how to be more welcoming and engaging to the players. And I wanted to have something that would provide a level of confidence and kind of like a checkbox for the mental health professionals, because at the end of the day, if they're going to refer a client, you need clout. You need to be able to say, I have someone I'm going to refer you to, that they are certified in X. So that was really, really important to me. And as I found out that information was there, it was awesome. I was so happy to learn about it. I dug into it and I like danced around, like, is the cost going to be worth it? Is this just going to be another IT certification thing? And ultimately the website information and what I learned about convinced me to pull the trigger. No regrets. Absolutely worth it.
So since you were certified, how, you said you were certified in the beginning of which quarter? Do you know, do you remember your cohort number?
I was cohort 10, which means I was certified in third quarter of 2021.
Awesome. So in the early stages of getting certified and moving into your business model, can you share with us the type of client or table player that you have? Are they adults? Are they children? Is it a mix?
It's a mix. I support anyone from ages 10 and up within my one-on-one tables. And I have had roughly 40 contracted sessions that were therapeutic in nature. And those sessions allowed me to work with young children who are struggling with school issues. Some were struggling with bullying. I had worked with many adults for anxiety and depression, especially social anxiety. I helped two or three people who wanted to just touch on the topics of gender dysphoria, and then also coming out to their parents and family. They wanted the opportunity to practice. So that was a really fun, you know, thing to set up and work with. I learned a little bit about them, and I draft the sessions semi-dynamically. So during my session zero, I learned about them. I asked them how they want their character to be. Does it want it to be them, a complete foil, or a little bit of a hybrid? So this way they can have, you know, some emotional touch points that their character shares. And we role play a bit. I learned what their style is. And then I immediately start adapting and introducing emotional or other sort of items into the role play that will evoke the correct responses that we're looking for, that they're trying to touch on. And then I've had one session where I had a mental health professional sit in and they observed and they just took notes, and they were trying to track whether or not their client was using the skills that they were arming them with. And it helped.
Have you seen that feedback yet?
I have. And it was wonderful. They were able to immediately like completely change their original plan for what they needed to work on with this client, because they were just kind of beating their head against the wall saying, practice this, did you do that? And they realized they were doing it, but they weren't conveying it correctly when she asked for the update. Thus, they were able to move on from there and practice building new tools and new coping mechanics.
I think that is one of the greatest takeaways when you enter into something that is unknown and you don't know if I impact one or five or 10, where do I find success? But in that one story alone, the impact of going to Geek Therapeutics, becoming a certified therapeutic dungeon master or game master, however you identify yourself, and then having a clinician sit in and see that the work that you put in and then created at the table is effective and based in evidence-based practices and interventions. And I find that to be so validating for so many reasons, because this is weird, right? Like, we're in a geeky community. A lot of people don't think that geek culture has anything really at its core that is good, except people spend way too much money. They go to conferences and they dress up and they act weird. But there is so much at play that can truly change somebody's life. And you've done that with a client, and the clinician got to see that firsthand. And I find that to just be amazing. And as someone who works in a client base, that is where I see wins. And I hope that you saw that as a massive win for everything that you decided to drop. in the security of the corporate world and then becoming this person, this beacon of light for people, really. Like, I'm just listening to you and I just keep thinking, you're a beacon of hope and change for others. And I'm just so impressed by the knowledge that you received in the program and have been able to turn that into an effective model. And so, is there a strategy that you use in all of your games, or are your strategies based on client when you are building out your session zero and moving into session one to get that to that therapeutic point?
I leverage my strengths. I'm not trying to be what someone else does. I'm not trying to emulate and create what another famous or popular DM did. I have a significant amount of experience in Dungeons and Dragons, and I have the benefit of having received therapy for multiple years. And while I wasn't providing it, I'm extremely intelligent and emotional intelligent, and I picked apart my therapists and psychiatrists all the time. I would ask them what techniques they were using. Why is this valid? I was unfortunately medicine resistant, so medication doesn't work on me very well. And because of my work environment, it was really hard to practice other techniques. So we did a lot of talk therapy and we explored things and we discussed them. And we talked about other options. Things got pretty bad. And I actually had done a full session of the electromagnetic therapy as well. And that helped a little bit and helped regulate me to an extent. But beyond that, talk therapy all day, every day. So my piece of advice here is be yourself above and beyond everything else. You do not need to know absolutely everything. You do not need to be the, you know, expert of your setting. You just need to know your system confidently enough to be able to support someone who does not know it. And from there, you just need to be able to be able to talk as if you are simply imagining and role-playing with your client. I actually explained this to another mental health professional. You don't have to be in Faerun running an inn. You can be where I'm located at in Ankeny, Iowa. You can be at the public library and you can have all the necessary encounters there that you want to. And if you want to have combat occur, believe it or not, there's a whole lot of combat that occurs in the real world that doesn't require a weapon, that requires running and pushing and hiding. And you just need to cover those expectations in session zero. What do you, my player, want from a fantasy role-playing experience? Do you want fantasy or do you want real life? And then from there, you talk with your player and you become aware that at the end of the day, you have made an outline of a picture, but you are coloring that picture together. And that is the goal.
Wow, that... it's hard to follow up on because that's beautiful. That is beautifully said. And yeah. I wish I honestly had something like that when I was in college in Pittsburgh, because that would have been amazing. Now, in one of our previous talks, we talked about your custom maps, which are beautifully drawn. And I believe that's one of them behind you. For the audience who can't see it, this is a beautifully detailed topographical like view of a forest setting with a canyon, and it's beautiful artwork and my kudos to you on it. Now, when you create these pieces of art, where do you come from when you're thinking about them?
Sure. So I use the program Incarnate. I have the professional version, and I will assure you that when I started out using the program, I was absolutely terrible. I thank you so much for the compliment on the art. It takes me a very, very long time. Art doesn't come easily to me, so I have to spend days on something that could take some of those ridiculously cool artists, maybe hours. But from an inspiration perspective, it's all about the story for me. Like, I look at a map and I say, how can I, as a dungeon master, create a meaningful encounter? And then an encounter can be either a puzzle, it can be role playing, or it can be combat. And then does this Matt, provide me sufficient inspiration and opportunity to leverage multiple encounters? Or is it a small one that's very deliberate and intentional? So sometimes it's just, I hop on there with a blank slate and I start plopping down some trees. I'm like, I want to make a forest. I'm not sure where I want to go. And I just play, you know, I have trees on there. Well, what's going to happen? Is there going to be a mountain? Is there going to be a lake? I don't know. We're going to see which thing I click accidentally and what happens. And then there's the other flip side of it, which is, you know, when I am working on my own content, I am writing stories. I'm writing bounties. I'm writing NPCs and world and lore. So there's that second flip side of it where there's intent. I need a city that has these themes. And I go in there and I attempt my best to execute on them in order to make cohesion. Because I, for me at least, I want to enable and empower a dungeon master that uses my content, which includes me, to be able to cohesively keep the story together. Not just kept together by loose threads, but you can understand why these races live here. You understand that there is a forest nearby and those forests have water sources. And a forest with water sources is thus teeming with life. How do they live there? Does it make sense? And when I'm building a dungeon, I'm not going to just plop down squares because who wants to walk 30 minutes down a hallway to get a potion from the potion room because I want to make a long, cool hallway filled with traps. So I think about, does this make sense logistically and realistically? And many times I actually start my draft of a map in Excel. I actually just resize all the squares to the same pixel count and I use the draw borders and I just doodle if I don't have access to physical scrap paper. And then I take it over to Incarnate and try to improve on it.
That's awesome. For me, as a model train person, it reminds me a lot of when I get the time and I have the space for laying out a table and creating the landscapes. And that's the level of detail, folks, that are in these maps. If you've ever seen a beautifully done miniature train table with forests and water and everything like that detailed out of it, that's the level of detail that Sean has in his maps. So I highly recommend, if you can, go and check them somewhere. Please tell me if they can. And go check these out because they are works of art in themselves.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I have some of the maps previewed on my website, which is thetabletopadventure.com. Make sure you include the. Tabletop Adventure was coined a while ago and hasn't freed up yet. So thetabletopadventure.com. In addition, you can find a Patreon link at the bottom. I produce and release maps for my Patreons 2 to 3 times a month at any tier. So if you support me at the dollar tier, you're going to get the same maps. Every other dollar of support is reinvested back into the business, including and up to, if you reserve at higher tiers, I allow you to pay forward for therapeutic sessions for other people who may be unable to afford it themselves. And then I hand those out as kind of Willy Wonka golden tickets to local psychiatrists and therapists in the area to hand out to people in need.
Awesome.
That is an amazing model. And I hope that as people are listening, they can take that away and implement that in their own practices or in their own D&D sessions, because I think giving back is so important. And when a Patreon can hear and see that we've helped provide therapeutic resources to somebody, that's amazing. And especially in this post-pandemic world where we've seen a spike in mental health concerns, because a lot of people were confined to their spaces where they didn't understand what that meant because they were in other spaces 8 to 12 hours a day, like in school or at work, and just relearning how to integrate with people is really hard, and we're still not fully there yet. And so I love that you are providing your patrons a outlet to also give back. And when they are providing something to the community, it just becomes that much bigger and the investment is so much more impactful. And I can't say enough how impressed I am, because it's amazing that you've come up with this really sound business model that is not only revenue generating, it's also giving back to communities to make sure that other people have access to these very unique therapeutic services, where oftentimes the barrier to entry is so high that people don't even know how to access that or if they'd be able to provide the funds to access that. So kudos to you. And I've been thinking while you've been talking about resistance and wondering if you have gotten any pushback or resistance to, one, quitting your job and going into full-time game play, and two, with individuals who don't really know what you're doing and looking at you like, Sean, you're kind of crazy. Has there been any resistance or pushback?
Not from my immediate family. So I'm very fortunate that my wife also happens to work in the corporate IT world as a technical writer, you know, building on her writing skills and editing skills. So thanks to a really, really strict budget control, breaking my head over everything in corporate America, we got ahead of our debt sufficiently enough to survive on a single income of just hers. And that was the catalyst that allowed me to go all in and pursue a dream and see how it works. So resistance from the immediate family, none. Resistance from the extended family. There was a lot of, are you sure? How do you know? But you know what? Like I said, I made my business model. I was able to showcase them how much I charge per seat, how much I charge per session, the frequency that I'm going to be running at to prevent burnout, my costs model, how much it costs to own a website, how much it costs to start an LLC, how much it costs to purchase and maintain a domain, the insurance necessary, and the way for myself to be covered and ensure that I'm not going to be sued or basically have my family brought under, and the reinvestment into the business, buying new books, buying new content, all of this. And then finally paying myself. So that helped defeat a lot of concerns and arguments from the resistance of the next stage within, you know, immediate to close family members. And friends were very supportive. Strangers always react with shock. They love the concept of doing D&D therapy until they say, oh, it's not free. And then all, you know, brakes come off. They're not happy with that. I had some people say things to the nature of, how could you charge for this sort of thing? To other people who just thought it was the most wonderful idea ever, but never personally would pursue it because they just, they can get their D&D fix elsewhere. It's okay. My audience isn't, or my target audience isn't everyone in the world. The people I am targeting will be thrilled and happy about the fact that my service is there and available to them. And at the end of the day, $30 for a therapeutic one-on-one session is pretty stinking close to what you pay for a copay. Yeah. And $17.50 for an hour, $35 an hour is a living wage for playing, that I'm running a D&D session, standard session. So I'm not charging an arm and a leg, and it's a meal, you know, and I don't want people to skip meals to pay for this, but that's the perspective I want to provide. It's a meal. It's no different than signing up for a tennis membership. It's no different than going over and getting private lessons for dance and music. If you would like your kid to get better and work on their social skills, yeah, you can totally go the football route. You can enlist them into martial arts and you can have them get into all these other popular things. But you know what? If they don't like that, get them to play D&D. They will talk. They will think critically. They'll learn how to take turns. There's math and they have to use math. And there's ways to plan ahead. How's your character going to build? What's this problem you're trying to overcome? So yeah, there's now an option for your kid, for you as an adult, for you as a very, very old young kid, to have an opportunity to come in, learn a game, play, meet people. Because I set my sessions up like classes, so you can just sign up, and until the seats are filled up, anyone can join the table. And I dynamically adjust the overall bounty that we're going to be working on to work for the differences in level for the characters.
You nailed executive functioning on the head. Mm-hmm. And that there are things that you can learn in sports, and you can learn in martial arts, and you can learn in dance, but there's something that you cannot learn in those events together, and that is the executive function of flexible critical thinking and communication with a group of individuals who are not and do not think like you to work together for the greater good of the guild or whatever you're adventuring in. And you said it so well that if you want your child or your adult to have these skill sets, D&D is where it's at. And you can find some of those things in sports. That's, yep. I'm not docking sports at all. I played them, but I learned things in tabletop role-playing that I never would have learned in sports. And mm-hmm. you said it so eloquently. And I hope that the listeners hear that your kids can learn a lot from role-playing mm-hmm. and role-playing with a person who is guiding them like you are. And man, I wish I'm going to clip that sound bite and keep it forever because it's so good.
It is.
So good.
And as a parent of an ADHD and an ODD kid, it's important. And once they're old enough, I'm going to talk to my co-parent, and I'm going to try and say, hey, let's try getting my daughter into this, who's ADHD. And because her birthday's coming up in April and she'll be 10. So it would be, I think she would benefit from it, because then you can use a lot of those ADHD coping mechanisms within the campaign.
Yeah, totally. Actually, that's one of the my very first clients was focusing on how to be more in the moment and how to make better planning. And so she had ADHD, and it was a wonderful time. I got to talk with them, and I got to gush here for a second. I apologize.
No, please,
go for it.
After three sessions, they no longer were coming into my sessions just due to a time conflict. But they were able to then go over to a convention and start playing Adventure League with a bunch of random people. And they didn't feel overwhelmed because they were just already comfortable with expectations. And they had the right techniques and tools because if I talked with them and I gave them their space to learn at their pace. And once they had it, it was mostly just ensuring that they were using their other tools outside of game to keep them grounded so that they didn't lose track of the game. And they didn't have to worry about learning and figuring things out on the fly. They could just focus on the fun and, you know, gain experience, because learning from new DMs, good and bad, it gives you more perspective to work with for what you like as a player.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah.
In clinical practices, we have this mantra of always meeting the client where they are. You never meet the client where you are. You never meet the client where you expect them to be. You meet them where they are today. And every day you meet them where they are. And to hear that story and know that that individual was able to go to a convention and play with strangers is doing just that, and getting them watching them walk to a place where they can feel comfortable in themselves, and being there and meeting them is just, it's phenomenal. I love that you have been able to take your passion and the training that you've received as a certified therapeutic game master and creating these spaces for individuals to learn and grow and be the best versions of themselves. And I was wondering what was the most impactful moment for you in your therapeutic certification, whether it was a tool or skill that you learned or a theory that you might not have understood before? What was the greatest takeaway from training?
There was a lot of good tidbits here and there. As mentioned, I already had the gaming lens. So some of the content being covered was, you know, dress right dress for me. I understood it and I got it. But I never received it through a lens of a mental health professional before. And exploring the topics of race, you know, appropriation, representation, giving some information around how to be inclusive. There was two particular sessions over the, I believe it's an 8 or 9 week course. Two of those sessions gave me so much insight and perspective into how to be thoughtful in a meaningful way, not just thoughtful in an empathetic way, so that I was being understanding and considerate of someone who needed that additional support to be included. I'll use a very simple example. Someone who may not have good vision, is mostly or completely blind, may not be able to understand the tells that you provide when you're describing something in the dungeon. While I write dungeon content and I write it with the intent of wanting to share it with others and eventually create a huge module and all that fun stuff, how do I overcome the gap of I can't see it? I can close my eyes and I can pretend. But the big aha moment for me was during one of the sessions of saying, stop pretending. You're not good enough. You shouldn't be trying to do it. Make an acquaintance or a friend who is blind. Have them help you. Have them write it. Even if you're going to tweak it and mechanically change it, et cetera, have them do it. And that's true for just about anyone that is struggling through issues. No matter your level of understanding and support, you should always be working with someone that is actively dealing with that issue or difficulty to ensure that you are capturing it correctly. That was one of the major takeaways. That was a huge just eye-opener of stop, go talk. Doesn't matter how good you are. You need other perspectives. You need the perspective you are working with.
That's,
I got nothing.
Yeah, I don't have anything to follow that up with either. But I want to give you a few moments here to plug your platforms, plug what you do, because we're coming up on our time, unfortunately. And just take a few moments and tell the audience where they can find you and where, if they are interested, they could sign up for one of your sessions.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for everyone listening. I hope that you've enjoyed the sultry sound of my terrible voice, but I will expand on that opportunity. Thank you so much, Cornell. I have a website called thetabletopadventure.com that has all my various social media links and everything else. You can find on my website information on how my sessions are constructed. You can also find every single race and class character combination available there, so that this way, as a new player, I really eliminate all of the like worry about how to make a character. All you need to do is show up and say, I would like to play a bunny and I would like to be a barbarian and I would like my background to be a acolyte. And I have made form fillable PDFs to the tune of about 25,000 of them that accounts for all of those combinations. So once that's done, I send you a form fillable PDF. It has everything you need to start the game. And all you got to think about is a few little extra bits, naming your character, some of your personality traits, and choosing a deity if you'd like to follow one, and so on. So it removes a lot of the, you know, how do I play D&D? How do I make a character? You don't need to worry about that. Just show up, have fun. And all my session itself will break down cost model. I'm very transparent about how I list this information. It's got my prices. It's got my available windows so you can schedule and book on the website. And then if you want to further support my business and my vision, there's Patreon links at the bottom of the pages. And on my Patreon, I have mentioned I produce maps, I produce classes, magical items to the tune of 2 to 3 times a month for all of my Patreon supporters. My goal and hope is that I get enough support, enough customers to grow my business, to eventually take this setting that is loosely placed in Faerun, D&D 5th edition, and take it into its own realm of Realms of Kymoria, where I can release PDF content of actual, like really well-described monsters and encounters. I can release my bounties. So this way you guys can run them at your own table. And I can release lots and lots of other things that have just been really well-received at my table that have empowered me to be a better version of myself and as a game master.
You have anything for our exit, Alicia?
No, except please tune in weekly if you are a therapeutic dungeon master, a geek therapist, or someone in the geeky space. Please reach out to us at media@geektherapeutics.com. We would love to chat with you. Sean, thank you so much for sitting with us and just sharing your passion for D&D and therapeutic role playing and processing. I'm so glad that you were here today, and I cannot wait to get to know you more, maybe roll some dice with you and watch you do your work. Everybody, I am Alicia Filiolo. This is Cornell Kritz, and
we will see you guys next week, same time, same channel. Take care of yourselves.